Let us get started. Parshas Kisavo. So again, as we did last week, let's go all the way to the back. We will start on page 1082 as you flip back there. So Parshas Kisavo has within it the second installment of the admonition, that which is referred to as the Tochacha, a series of verses in which Hashem, through Moshe and this week's Parsha, goes through the horrible curses and calamities which will befall the Jewish people if they do not adhere to the laws of the Torah. This section, as you are familiar with, is read in a quiet undertone in shul by the person reading from the Torah. You know, if one were to study them and go through all of these psukim inside, they're really just horrific, the descriptions that the Torah has as to what will befall the Jewish people. You know, the Chavetz Chaim reported to have said that in all shuls around the country, the custom is, as I just mentioned, to read this quietly. It's not read out loud with a regular voice that the person reading the Torah usually does. And he used to say it really should be the opposite. If you wanted, the point of this is that Hashem wants to let us know these are the rules and the regulations. This is how the game works. If you keep the laws of the Torah, you'll have these blessings. And if not, you'll have these horrible curses. This is the one part that should be read out loud. But nonetheless, we do not. So what I want to do today is let's study just a little bit the very end of the Toichacha, the very end of this admonition, a couple of verses at the end. And then if we have time, which I suspect we'll go through the last final paragraph of the Parsha as well. All right, so let's start 1082. Let's start there, verse Samach. Pasuk Samach Hey 65. We'll start there and move forward. Uvagoyim haheim lo yisargia v'lo yem anoyach lechaf raglacha. Says the Torah, amongst those nations from which you'll be exiled to, you will not be tranquil. You will have no peace. You will not have rest for the sole of your foot. V'nosan Hashem lecha shom leiv ragoz v'chilion einayim v'da'avo nofesh. There Hashem will give you a trembling heart, longing of the eyes, and suffering of the soul. The Torah describes what will be in the lands of our enemies, unable to find peace, unable to find tranquility, no rest for our souls. This description of the heart and the eyes and the soul, the trembling heart, the longing of the eyes, the suffering of the soul, the adjectives, the way the Torah describes the Jewish people. And then this is the verse that we're eventually going to, we'll focus a little bit on later. V'hayu chayecha tuluyim lecha mineged. Your life will hang in the balance. Rashi says the simple meaning of this, we'll describe a different meaning, but the simple meaning, your life will hang in the balance, says Rashi. You will constantly be afraid of the sword, never sure whether or not you will have peace, you'll have the ability to live, you'll always be persecuted. Ufochadeta laila v'yoimam, you will be fearful, frightened both night and day. You will not be sure of your livelihood. So the verse has three separate phrases. Number one, your life will hang in the balance. Number two, you will be frightened night and day. And number three, you will not be sure of your livelihood. Let's continue two more. Samach Zayin 67. Baboiker toimar miyitein erev. In the morning you will say, who can give back last night? The morning will be so bad that you will desire and yearn for the night before. If only we can be back to the way it was last night. This morning at daybreak, this is even worse than it was last night. Uva erev, and then that following evening, tomar, you will say, niitein boiker, who can give back the daytime? It will be such a progressively worse situation for you every day, being worse than it was the day before, that at each stage you will yearn for what had been previously. Every morning you'll wake up and say, I wish I could have it the way that it was last night. And then by the end of that day, you will say, I wish I could have it as I did in the morning, as it has just continuously gone worse and worse. From the fright of your heart that you will fear, and the sight of your eyes that you will see. Again, the Torah just describing from that fright, that which you will feel in your heart and in your eyes, constantly yearning to get back to a better situation than you find yourself in now. And last pasuk, this is the very last verse of the entire admonition. Ve'eshivcha Hashem Mitzrayimah, ba'anios, you will be return to Egypt in ships. Baderach asher amarti lecha lo sosif ol lirosa. Hashem says, I promise you that you'll never go back. I promise you. I told you never to go back. Right? There's a mitzvah not to return to Mitzrayim, and you will be sent back in ships back to the very land from which I redeemed you, from the very land that we celebrate Pesach, the redemption from Mitzrayim. You'll be sent back in ships as slaves. There you will even offer yourselves to be sold, that you should be bought as slaves and as maidservants, and even that will not work. Ve'ein kone, you will be so downtrodden, and they'll be so uninterested in keeping you around. They will not even want you as slaves. And with that, the Torah concludes the words of the Teichacha. This is just, we just read three or four verses. The whole thing is just one horrible description after another of the pain, the suffering. Your livelihood will hang in the balance. You will not be sure if you will have what to eat. Fearful of day, fearful of night. You will not even be able to sell yourselves as slaves. And then as the Torah concludes, last 69, Samach Tes, these are the words of the covenant that Hashem commanded Moshe to seal with the children of Israel and Moab. Aside from the other covenant they already had done in Chorev, this is a new one, and that concludes the Teichacha in all of its glory, if you will. I'd like to focus on, amongst these four psukim that we read, one of the psukim in Samach Vav 66, the Torah said, as we stressed, three different ideas in verse 66. Number one, V'hoyu chayecha tluyim lecha mineged, your life will hang in the balance. The bottom of page 1082. That was the first verse. Your life will hang in the balance. You will be frightened day and night. And number three, you will not be sure, literally sa'amin, you will not believe in, you will not be confident or sure of b'chayecha, of your livelihood. Those are the three things. So the Gemara, again, as I mentioned, Rashi says the simple meaning is physically. You will not be sure whether or not your life will be safe. That's what it means to say your life will hang in the balance. You're not going to be sure in any way whether or not you'll be able to survive. The Gemara has a little different take on this verse. And the Gemara expounds upon these three phrases to all be a reference to the very last phrase. The last phrase was, you will not be sure of your livelihood. That's the final of the three phrases in this admonition. And the Gemara expounds upon all three phrases to be various levels of not being sure of one's livelihood. The prospect of living and not knowing where one's food will come from, not knowing where one will be able to sustain oneself, how will I support myself? The Gemara says really all three phrases are referring to that at various levels. So the Gemara says as follows. The first phrase, your life will hang in the balance, says the Gemara, Zehalokeyach tvua mishana lishana. This is a reference to one who buys grain for a full year at a time. Why is that so bad? So Rashi explains here in the Gemara, meaning he doesn't have any land on his own. I don't have land. It represents the ability to self-sustain myself. I can plant every season, I can harvest, I'll have the crops that I need, and I'll be able to support my family and feed them. If I don't have any land, all that I then have is the ability to buy that which I'll need for my family, but I can't do it on my own. I don't have the ability to provide my own food. I need to somehow have the money to buy money, to buy food for my family. So this first phrase and this curse, the first phrase in the admonition is a reference to a person who has to buy food for an entire year because he doesn't have any land, says Rashi. That's what it means to say your life will hang in the balance. She'eina yodeya im yihiyu lo ma'os l'shana haba. I don't know that I'll have money for next year. I'm living a year at a time. This is what I got. I got enough to support my family for the year. I don't have the land to self-sustain myself. So when you say, how are you doing financially? I have a year's worth. I can survive for a year. This is what I got. What's going to happen next year? I'm not sure. We'll see what happens over the course of this year. But right now in my savings account, that's what I have. I know that I'm comfortable for a year if anything happens, and that's what I buy for. But more than that, I have no idea what's going to happen. Continues the Gemara. What about the next phrase? Ufachaza talaylu v'yoimam. Someone who's afraid day and night. Ze halokech tfuah me erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. He can only afford to buy for a week at a time. He buys from Friday to the next Friday. He doesn't know what's going to happen after that. I have a week's worth of money in my savings account. I'm living by week to week. could provide for myself this week. I know I can, this week I'll be all right. And then over the course of this week, I got to make it for the next week. But I don't have anything to fall back on. That's the next level of the admonition of the curse, where I can't even say that I can survive for a full year. I have 1 week's worth, and that's what I'm living off of. Ba'al ta'am in b'chayecha, and the final phrase, you will not be sure of your livelihood, ze hasomech al ha'palter. That's someone who relies on the baker. Someone who lives literally from day to day. He, paycheck to paycheck, literally less than that, not even a 2 week or a month scale, living day to day. He doesn't know that he'll be able to survive tomorrow. Tomorrow, what's going to be? I have no idea what's tomorrow. All that I know is that I have money in my pocket for today. Go to the bakery, I buy the bread that I need, and then I go to work. Because if I don't go to work today, I don't know where it's coming from for tomorrow right now. I just spent my last cent on today's food, and we'll worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow. Says the turn again. Remember where this is. This is the very end. This is the third to last verse in the entire admonition, which is 60 some odd verses long. This is at the very end of the third. This is the second set of that admonition. We already had one much earlier in Parshas Bechukosai. Much earlier at the end of Sefer Vayikra. And this is the curse that the Torah describes as someone who will not be able to rely on his livelihood. He's not, his life hangs in the balance. Three levels of having a person whose life hangs in the balance. The first person who's got a year's worth of finances put aside, he could buy for a full year at a time. Second level, he could buy for a week at a time. And the third level, the person who literally lives day to day. There's an obvious, I don't say obvious, there's a problem here. There's a problem here. There, what we're describing here is a curse. A curse of somebody who doesn't know where his livelihood is coming from. A curse who doesn't know what exactly is going to be. What situation he's going to find himself in, whether or not he can or cannot support himself. And we all know that is a horrible situation. We know that that's certainly a curse. Certainly a position that no one wants to find himself in. And we basically work our whole lives to ensure that we don't end up in a situation where it's literally day to day. That's, I don't know what's going to be tomorrow. We never want to be there. I want to be comfortable than a week. I'd like to be even more comfortable than a year. That's already a blast, but that's certainly would fit in our minds. So the problem is as follows. There's a Gemara in Yuma, Seches Yuma, the tractate which discusses the laws of Yom Kippur, coming up soon. The Gemara is bothered by the following concept. The man, food from heaven, as you know, fell for the Jewish people while they spent their 40 years in the desert, which I will remind you are the very same people to whom this admonition is being given. This is who Moshe is speaking to right now. Speaking to the Jewish people at the end of the 40 years in the desert, people who have known nothing other than food falling from heaven. This is the generation that left Egypt, primarily died. Those who were... Yeah?
I thought Moshe already died.
You mean in this part of the Chumash?
He had
not yet. The last eight verses. Well, he's got a couple more speeches left. A couple more speeches. Last year. Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago, I remember.
The Yeshua class. Never mind.
Yeah, it's towards the very end, but we still have a couple more weeks of final goodbye speeches. So he's speaking to the people who lived in the Midbar. He's speaking to the people who lived in the desert, who grew up with walking out of their front door and finding man there on the floor for them to eat, the spiritual food which sustained them. And the Gemara, when it discusses this concept of the man, asks a question, why did the man fall every day? It would have been much more convenient for the Jewish people, if you're talking about a system in which Hashem is clearly taking care of His children in the desert, these 3 million or so people wandering through a desert for 40 years, and Hashem is providing for all that they need with the well that travels with them, and food that falls from the heavens. It would have been easier if the man fell once a year, once a week. Every morning I have to go out and collect. Why should the man fall only once every day with that day's necessity as opposed to allowing the man to fall and go out once a week? I don't go shopping every day. That's a tremendous inconvenience. You go once a week. You make up your list. You go out. You buy what you need. And that's the way to do it. So the Gemara asks this question. The Gemara asks, Mipnei ma yorod, mipnei ma lo yorod lohem li Yisrael man pamachas b'shana. Why should the man not fall once a year? Let them gather up, put it in their little closets, in their tents, put it in the pantry. You'll always have. You'll know that it's there. You don't have to worry about anything. Amar lahem. So the Gemara answers. This was a question that was asked to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, his students. The students asked Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. They asked him this following question. So says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, answers the following question. I'll tell you a parable, in Mahadover Doma, to what this can be compared to, this question that you're asking. The Melech Basar Vidom Sheyesh Lo Ben Echad. King, human, flesh and blood, king, who has a son. Pasuk Lo Mizonosov Hamachas Bishona. If he were to give him what he needs for the year, once a year, if he would designate, this is what you need, here is everything that you have, here's your one check, you could deposit, put it in your account, and you'll draw on it whenever you want, put it in your storehouse. So you know what will happen, says the Gemara. Lo hayam makdil p'nei oded olam hamachas b'shana. He'll only come to visit his father once a year. Come the time of year where it's time to ask for the yearly installment. Oh, look who's coming to pay me a visit. It's my favorite son. Here is my prince. Come on in and greet me and tell me how much you love me as I write out this check once a year. So the king wisened up and said, you know what? I'm going to give you your daily rations daily. Every day you can come and get that which you need, says the Gemara. Look what happened. The good son, the prince, showed up at the king's door every day. Time to get his food. He knew that he needed the king. He relied on the king for his sustenance, for that which he needed. King would be visited every day by the son. Says Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai to his students, Af Yisrael, the Jewish people as well, have a very similar relationship with Avinu Shebashamayim, with our Father in Heaven. Mishiyesh lo arbo v'chamish obonim, a person has a family, he's got four or five children at home. Hayadoyek, he's going to be concerned, he's going to be worried. Maybe the man's not going to fall tomorrow. I have nothing in my pantry. There is no food in the Jewish tent. And we've developed this culturally since our 40 years in the desert. There was no pantry in the tent in the 40 years of the desert. No pantry at all. Because the man fell for that one day, and you put in breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that was it. So, says Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, people were concerned. I got a family to feed. I got children. Nimtzu kulam meisim, everyone's going to die of starvation if I don't have what I need. Nimtzu, says Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, so what you find, what comes out, kulam mechuvonim es libon la'aviyim shebo shamayim. Everyone constantly had their hearts directed to their Father in Heaven because they saw in front of them clearly the need. I have my family. I need to feed them. I got nothing in my tent. There's no food. The only thing I felt today is exactly what I need for today. What's going to be for tomorrow? So my heart was directed always towards Hashem and Shemayim, who, for whom I needed to rely on for tomorrow's sustenance. And the system was set up, so the Talmidim asked the question, the students asked, wouldn't it have been easier just to send a man once a week, even once a year? And the Rav Shimon bar Yochai says, sure, it would have been easier. But there's a relationship at stake. There's a relationship between the father and the son. And if a father sets up a relationship with his son in which he provides for him once a year, well, then they have a once a year type of relationship. If you set up a relationship in which I have what you need and I give you what you need daily, well, then our relationship will develop in a daily type of manner because you're constantly relying on me. Every night when you go to sleep, says Rav Shimon bar Yochai, the Jewish head of the household in the desert went to sleep with his mind in, I need to make sure that I'm doing the right thing because I'm relying on you to send me food tomorrow for my family. I was, where is it coming from? I don't have anything else. See the problem? Asks Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Rosh Yeshiva from the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, in the earlier part of the century, says, I don't understand. The Torah is giving us a klala, a curse? The Torah is giving us an admonition, the very end of the admonition, the worst of the worst. And what's the worst of the worst? You're not going to have a year's supply. You're not going to have any food. You're going to be suffering. Worse than that, you're only going to have a week's supply. Worse than that, you're not even going to know where it's coming tomorrow. You're going to have enough to buy bread this morning, but tomorrow morning, nothing in the pantry. No idea where that's coming from. And we understand that, right? I mean, that's horrible. Could you imagine telling somebody who's in such a situation, who just spent their last $2 to buy breakfast, wow, what a great situation you're in. That wouldn't fly. That's certainly a curse. Yet the Gemara says, these very same people who are receiving this curse lived in existence in which they only received that which they needed for that very one day. And that was the greatest blessing they could imagine, in which the relationship between them and Hashem was fostered, was bolstered, because now they have a relationship which every day their hearts are aimed and directed towards Avinu Shebashamayim, their Father in Heaven, in order to make sure that they would have what they need. So how does that work? We have this exact same situation. Literally, the exact same situation is on the one hand given as an explanation for the relationship, the special relationship between Hashem and His children in the desert, in the way that He provided the man. And the exact same situation is provided as the worst of the worst, the cursed of the cursed, at the end of the admonition for the type of situation will happen, which you won't have food for tomorrow. I like that question. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, it's a beautiful idea. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, very often the situations that we are in which we would define it as being a blessed situation or a cursed situation, has very little to do with the reality of the situation that we're in, and much more with the state of the relationship that we have with Hashem during the time that we're in it. So that, yes, in the time of a Hester Panim, where Hashem's face is hidden from us, where there's no relationship, where He has turned His back and said, go fend for yourself, that is the greatest curse in the world. A person who doesn't know where they're going to get food for tomorrow, and Hashem is not close to him. They don't have a level of emunah. They're not in a place where they have the trust and the belief and the closeness in which they're developing that to say, yes, I put my faith in Hashem that tomorrow I will have. There's no greater curse than that. Yet that exact same situation for a person in a different mindset, in a different place, in a different scenario, in which they also have no food in their pantry. They also have no idea where their food's coming tomorrow. And they dedicate their heart and their minds to say, I trust and believe that You will be the one to provide. You are my Father in Heaven who will not abandon me. And is the greatest of blessings in which the relationship is fostered in that situation. If you look at a situation itself, that's not the criteria alone for determining whether or not one is in a blessed state or in a cursed state. Because sometimes the exact same situation is in itself a blessing and in itself a curse. And the real issue, and that's really what the whole game of life that we're playing, is not about the situation, but about the nature of the relationship between the Jew and Hashem, and where we are at, and the type of that relationship. And in a time in which we have pushed Him away, and it's what brings on the teichacha, what brings on the admonition. It's not because we're being good Jews, because we strayed far from a relationship with our Creator. And that's the truth. If you are in a situation in which you have strayed far from a relationship with your Creator, you will find that a situation in which you don't have food in the pantry is the greatest curse you can imagine. Nothing can possibly be worse than that. You don't know where you're going to get tomorrow's meal from. In a situation in which your relationship with the Creator is constantly growing and developing, and you're in a state in which that's moving in a positive direction, that exact same situation is the warmest of embraces that you can imagine. Can you imagine a being, we're so far from ourselves, can you imagine a situation of the Jews in the desert who were in such a situation in which they literally felt God providing for them every single day, in which they were not lying on themselves at all. I have nothing. My pantry is empty, and my entire faith, my being, my family, my life is entirely in Your hands. And I see and I feel that every day when I open up my front door. Is there a warmer embrace than that? Can you imagine that feeling of the Jewish people in the desert totally relying on Hashem, totally being able to say, You provide for everything that I have? And yet at that same time, that exact same situation, can you be any farther from your Creator when you're in a place in which you're totally just, I don't know, where are you gonna, I don't know what you're going to eat. Don't look at me. You've already severed that relationship. It's not here. And when that relationship is severed, that same situation is a death sentence. What a horrible curse. If you don't even know where your food, your next meal is going to come. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, this you find the situation in life is not in itself the determinant. It's not the actual, if you just look in a vacuum and say, well, what situation are they in? That doesn't necessarily mean that it's the worst thing. And this is one of the classic answers why the righteous suffer. You know, that question, I don't need to express. You've all heard that question, experienced that question, thought about that question. One of the answers that's given, and obviously you've heard over the years, you've heard many answers, but you look at somebody and you say, he's so poor. Look at how he's suffering. Why are they suffering so? One of the responses is, who says he's suffering? Sure, he's poor. Who says he's suffering? You, meaning us, the ones who ask that question, would imagine ourselves being in that situation to be horrible. We would look at that, not knowing where next week's Shabbos meal is coming from, and we just think that, I just can't imagine such a horrible thing. And that's where we're at. But I'm not saying that's where in the situation. That's a horrible thing. I don't want to be in such a situation. I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. But how do you know that the actual person who is there, maybe they're feeling the warm embrace that, you know something? They would say to you, you know, I have no idea how this happens. Every single Shabbos there's food on the table. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense to me. But they feel the warmth and the embrace. They feel the closeness. We're not in their shoes. Now, I'm not saying everyone who's like that, some people are actually suffering. I'm not saying they're not. But the question, the theological question of why is it that they suffer, how do you know that they're suffering? Because of the situation which you view as being a curse, and therefore they're suffering. Sometimes the same situation doesn't necessarily mean the same thing for everybody. It's the relationship that is under that situation in Judaism that we really focus on. Are they close or are they far? And that often will determine more. There might be a tremendous amount of joy in that house and a tremendous amount of seeing the miracles of their existence and seeing the way that Hashem is taking care of them week by week by week. They are being provided for in a way that the rest of us almost never see. And they're actually in a much greater place than the rest of us. And I'm not saying that's in every situation, but this idea that Rav Chaim Shlevitz points out, this fascinating idea that the exact same situation is described as the greatest of blessings and at the same time the greatest of curses, really underscores that idea that it's really the relationship that matters in Judaism, not necessarily the situation that you find yourself in. That is his idea. Ooh, I love that. Okay. Let's finish up to the end of the parasha. There's another beautiful thought that I want to share with you, unrelated, at least on the surface, to what we just discussed. Okay, so Perek Chavtes, page 1084. Eight more psukim at the end of this week's parasha. Let's just learn through part of Moshe's final speeches. I have a friend who I ran into in a wedding in New York just a few weeks ago during the summer. So we had started Sefer Devarim, which is primarily comprised of Moshe's farewell speeches to the Jewish people. So he said to me, he's a little older than I am, and he's a Rebbe in a yeshiva in Israel, and he ran into a student of his at the wedding together. And he told me, this friend of mine, that the student had asked him for a Dvar Torah and the Parsha. He says, Rebbe, it's so nice to see you. Tell me a Dvar Torah and the Parsha. So he said to me that he said, Dvar Torah and the Parsha? We're in Devarim. You don't need a Dvar Torah. Just open up the Chumash and read Moshe's words. Like, you can't possibly add to anything that Moshe says. It's just say the words. It's right there for you. Everything you need. It'd be impossible to need to add to anything more than what's there. And I just remember, it's so true. You read through the psukim in Moshe's speeches that he gives throughout these parshas. They are just beautiful, and they speak for themselves. So let us learn that which Moshe has to say. So again, now, the context of the verses that we're reading now are at the end of this Teichacha. He has just given the Jewish people 60-some-odd verses of some harsh predictions of that which will befall the Jewish people. Vayikra Moshe, El Kol Yisrael Vayomer Aleihem. Moshe then calls and summons all the people together and says, Atem Re'isem Eis Kol Asher Asa Hashem Le'enechem. The Eretz Mitzrayim, you have seen everything that Hashem has done before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Paro, to his servants, and all of his lands. This is one of the classic psukim in the validity of the Torah and the proofs that those discuss whether or not this was really divine in nature or wasn't divine in nature. If you have a book that's given to a people and it says in the book, you, the recipients of this book, yourselves saw these miraculous events, a people who they themselves did not see those miraculous events probably would not accept such a book. You couldn't convince somebody to do all the things that it says to do in the Torah if it says in the Torah that I, who am receiving this, saw this myself, and I didn't. It wouldn't last very long. So Moshe himself says to the people who are receiving this You yourselves have seen this, Hamasos Hagdelos Hasharo Einacha, again, that you yourselves saw the wondrous acts, Haosos Vahamosim Hagdolim Haheim, the signs and the wonders. Pasuk Gimel is an odd pasuk. V'lo nason Hashem lochem leiv lo da'as ve'inayim liros vo'oznayim lishmoya. Hashem has not given you a heart to know, eyes to see, or ears to hear, ad hayoyim hazeh, until this day. So it's been 40 years, we've been together, we've been through a lot. I just stated you saw those wondrous events which took place in Mitzrayim, all the miraculous episodes which took place as we left. And then Moshe says, but you should know that Hashem has not given you a heart to understand, nor eyes to see, nor ears to hear until today. As if something has happened today, at the end of the 40 years, that would change or make something different than everything which has transpired until this point, because that's the statement that he makes. Nothing that you didn't have the heart to understand, or the eyes to see, or the ears to hear until today. We will get back to that momentarily. Let's read a little bit further. Pasuk Dalet 4. Va'oylech eschem arboim shona ba'midbar. I have led you for 40 years in the midbar, the desert. Lo bolu sam lo seichem yaleichem. Your clothing, your garments have not worn out. V'nal choloi volso mi'al roglacha. Your shoes did not wear out. Lechem lo achaltem v'yayim eshecha lo shasisem. Bread, you did not eat any bread. You did not drink any wine. For 40 years, a miraculous existence you lived. The clothing, you've had the same set of clothing for 40 years. It's grown with you. It's never worn out. Hot days in the desert, not a problem. Shoes, one pair of shoes. 40 years walking in the desert, one pair of shoes. Bread, no drink, no wine, food falling from the heavens. All for what purpose? All that you should know, I am Hashem, your God. Let's go back to that verse 3, Pasuk Gimel. What does that mean? Lo nason Hashem lachem leiv lo das ve'nayim liros. Until today, you have not had a heart to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear. Says Rashi, on the last line of your first column, lo nason Hashem lachem leiv lo das lahakir es chazdei HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'lidobek bo. Until today, you have not had a heart to understand the kindness of Hashem to be able to cleave to Him. Which is really at this point just furthering our question. Something has happened today that you now have the ability to recognize the good that Hashem has done to you. Which good? That which Moshe just spoke out. Your clothing never worn out. Your shoes have been the same. No food, no wine, just the man falling from heaven. To be able to cleave to Hashem, until today you have not been able to recognize His kindness. And what happened today? Says Rashi, Ad hayom hazeh shomati, I have heard, Rashi is a very fascinating comment, I have heard that the meaning of this is as follows. She'oso hayom, she'nosan Moshe sefer ha-Torah livnei Levi. This was the same day, the day that's taking place, that Moshe is discussing this with the Jewish people, is the same day that Moshe gave a Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah, the one that he'd been writing, the original Sefer Torah, to the tribe of Levi to safekeep. As it says, a little bit later, in Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Tes, so if you'll just flip quickly just to see it inside, to page 1094. Beginning of Parshas Vayelech. So next week's Parshah will be Nitzavim, and we have also Vayelech. Very often those two go together. So in the beginning of Parshas Vayelech, all at the very end of the Chumash, the end, very right towards the end, it says in verse 9, Pasuk Tes, page 1094, Vayichtav Moshe HaTorah Hazos, Moshe wrote down all of this Torah, Vayitzna Levi Hanoisim Es Aron Bris Hashem Vel Kol Zeknei Yisrael, and he gave it to Aaron already had died, to the Bnei Levi, to the Kohanim, to the sons of Levi, those who were in charge of carrying the Aaron, and to the elders of Yisrael, and they would be the ones who would safekeep this Sefer Torah. And then the Torah continues, and he commanded them with various other halachas. So who was in charge of this original Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote down? was the tribe of Levi, Moshe's own very tribe. They were the ones who were in charge of the Aron, and therefore it would make sense that they would be the ones in charge of the Torah, which was placed in the Aron, as it was to then continue its travels until it would eventually end up years, years, years later in the Beis HaMikdash. But until then, it was in the Mishkan and in the Aron, housed therein. Says Rashi, back to our verse. Ad hayom hazeh, was this day that you now have a heart to understand. What happened on this day? Says Rashi, I heard, this is the same day, page 1084. This is the same day that Moshe gave the Torah to the Bnei Levi, to the sons of Levi, to hold on to. Bohu kol Yisrael lifnei Moshe. When that happened, the rest of the Jewish people came to Moshe, and they had a complaint. V'amrulo Moshe Rabbeinu, af anu amadnu b'sinai. What kind of business is this giving the Sefer Torah to the tribe of Levi? We also stood at Har Sinai, v'kibalnu es ha-Torah v'nitno lanu. We also received the Torah, and it was given to us. Uma to mashlit es b'nei shivtecha aleha. What kind of business is this that you are giving rule or authority to your tribe? V'yomru lanu, and they are going to say, tomorrow lo lachem nitna, lanu lit nitna. Generations from now, they're going to say, Torah's not yours. We're the other tribes. We are the tribe of Levi. We are the only ones who received the Torah. Look, we received it. We have it. We have a tradition that Moshe Rabbeinu himself gave it to us. It's the tribe of Levi that's our possession. Say the people of Israel to Moshe, you can't do this. You can't just give the tribe of Levi the Torah. All these 40 years, after Maimon Har Sinai, we all were standing at Har Sinai, we all received the Torah. Now, 40, there's a debate in the Gemara whether or not Moshe wrote the Sefer Torah at the very end of the 40 years. The verse we just read, he wrote it all then. As he'd been teaching it as the 40 years went on, he wrote it all at the end. Or he wrote it piecemeal, as each law was taught, he wrote it down and then put it all together at the very end. But here is our original Sefer Torah. And Moshe hands it to the tribe of Levi for safekeeping. And the Jewish people rise up and complain and say, nothing doing, that's not fair. Because we're afraid tomorrow, the next day, the next year, maybe 10 years from now, the tribe of Levi is going to be holding on to the Sefer Torah, and we're going to be left with nothing. And we're going to be out, and they're going to claim that we never received the Torah. V'samach Moshe al Hadavar. And this brought great joy to Moshe. Moshe was thrilled with this complaint. Says Moshe to the Jewish people, Va'al zois omer lahem, hayoim hazeh nihyesa la'om. We'll look at that pasuk in a moment. This day you have become a nation. Hayoim hazeh hevanti. It is on this day that I've understood shatem dveikim v'chafetzim b'mochom, that you are cleaving and desire Hashem. It's when I see your foresight, that you're concerned, will this ever happen? Chas v'shalom. If the tribal Levi would ever tell the Jewish people, you're out and we're... No. But that you're concerned that you're going to be out. That you, the Jewish people, are concerned that there'll be a way, an opening for the tribal Levi to say, Torah's not yours. You only do something like that. You only come with that complaint if you're afraid that that might happen and that you're not going to have the Torah. So Moshe was samach ad ma'od, extremely joyous, excited when he heard this complaint that the Jewish people were afraid that they might be excluded from the laws of the Torah, from that relationship with Hashem which it represents, that they came to complaint. And Moshe says, today you have become a nation. One more step. You see how Rashi is connecting this one day to a bunch of different places. Flip back to verse 27, verse 9. This is on page 1072. This is earlier in this week's parsha. Verse 9. Vayidaber Moshe v'akoyanim halvim kol Yisrael leimor. Hashem, Moshe, and the Kohanim and the Levim spoke to all the Jewish people. Now this is so Moshe with the Kohanim and the Levim speaking to the Jews, saying, Haskes, Ushma Yisrael, be attentive and listen. Hayoim hazeh nihyesa la'om la'Hashem elokecha. Today you have become a nation to Hashem, your God. Says Rashi, what do you mean today you will become a nation? Rashi connects this Hayom Hazeh, the today that's described in verse 20, in chapter 27, today you have become a nation, is the same today you have a heart to understand and eyes to see and ears to hear, which is the same today which happens in verse 30, chapter 31, in which Moshe gives the Torah to the children of Levi. Rashi connects all three of those and says when that event happens, when Moshe gave the Torah to the Bnei Levi and the Jewish people complained and they came to Moshe and they said, we don't want to be excluded, it's that Moshe says, today you have become a nation, and it's because that you have become a nation that has become one which desires to cleave and become close to Hashem, that you now have a new heart to understand and eyes to see and ears to hear, because there's a new step, a new level of your relationship in which you have proactively come to ensure that you will always be part of this covenant, that you will always be part of the Torah and the Jewish people, never to allow even an opening that will ever allow something to happen later. I don't even want, says the Jewish people, I don't even want there to be a possibility of someone ever saying that this doesn't belong to me, it's not my inheritance. When that happened, Moshe says, that is a new level in the relationship. Hayom hazeh niyeh solam. Today you have become a nation. Today you have a new heart to understand all of the goodness that Hashem has done for you over the years. Because until now, there's been a lot of complaints in our 40 years in the desert. There's been a lot of problems, a lot of things that haven't gone exactly right. And here at the end of the 40 years, Moshe says, this is the moment that I've been waiting for. Where the children, after all of these years of hardship, after all of these years, say, wait a minute, you can't give the Torah to the children of Levi. What about us? We need to be part of it. Samach Moshe Mo'od. Today you became a nation. Today you became with a new heart. If you're still on page 1072, on the phrase of today you have become a nation, Rashi says another idea on the concept of today you have become a nation. Rashi says, B'chol yom yihyu be'einecha ki'ilu hayom bo'os imo bebris. Every day it must be in your eyes as if today you entered into the covenant with Hashem. That's the meaning. Hayom hazeh, today you have become a people. Rashi says, this isn't just speaking to the people of the desert. It's speaking to all of us. Every day must be in your eyes as if today you have entered into the covenant. If you put all of those ideas together, you end up with that sentiment of every day the Jew has to say to himself, I have to be part of that. I can't allow anything to happen which will open up a possibility that I need to be part of this. This is my inheritance. This is my Yerusha, part of my legacy, it's my Torah, my forefathers were standing at Har Sinai, they received the Torah, they were a part of it, and I need to be a part of it also, and it needs to have that freshness and excitement as if every day was the first day that you entered into the covenant. Hayom hazeh, today was the day that you entered in. Rashi elsewhere in this week's Parsha, in fact, himself also says a very similar sentiment that every day it needs to be as if, every day needs to be new and fresh to you like the day that it was given. That's the nature of the relationship of the Torah, the newness, the freshness, the excitement of being a part of it. That idea of today you've been given the heart to understand, the eyes to see, and the ears to hear. That's it for today.